2SER's Arts and Culture Show.
Don't make me say it's so hot right now.
Tan caliente ahora!
Your weekly dose of arts and culture.
And all of that sort of stuff.
It's that weird thing that they're classics because they're classics because they're classics, and then they become the classics and everyone wants to do the classics because they're classics.
He's amazing.
Well, you need a lot of room for all that blood.
And he's hot as a firecracker.
You're listening to So Hot Right Now. You better not use me saying that.
Amazing babes.
On 2SER 107.3.
Hello, hello, hello. You're listening to So Hot Right Now, your weekly dose of arts and culture. Big thanks to Sean and T from the Vultures Nest doing what they do and making people laugh at it. This is the show where we talk about everything from pop culture, visual arts, performing arts, and we've got a massive show for you today. Catherine Puey, a renowned choreographer, is doing some dancing with stilts in former dance projects above ground. So she's going to be coming in and chatting all about it. Also, the founding director of the Australian Women in Music Awards will also be coming in for a chat about the event, which happens later this year in Brisbane. But we're going to see some very exciting ladies being rewarded for all their fantastic work in music. And as always, Blake Howard from Graffiti with Punctuation on Gaggle of Geeks. There is a podcast, and if you're a geek out there, happy Supernova weekend. Have fun at Supernova and say hi to Maria Lewis if you're there as well. We're going to kick things off with a tune, though. Here's one from Yeah Yeah Yeah's frontwoman, Karen O, her solo, from her solo work, Crush Songs. This one's called Day Go By. You're listening to SER with me, Sophie.
German piano prodigy Nils Frahm returns to Sydney Opera House this October, debuting his acclaimed new album and grandest statement yet, All Melody, in the concert hall for the first time. Pushing the boundaries of contemporary, classical, and everything in between. Book now for Nils Frahm, October 14 at sydneyoperahouse.com. Sponsors of 2SER.
Sleepyhead Red, it's time for bed.
Sleepyhead Red,
it's time for itty bye, bitty bye. It's time for bed. A quarter to ten, again.
Sleepy head red.
Just once again, and then let's do it again.
You know I hate to leave you, but I've really got to go.
Maybe if the weather's willing, I'll see you in my dreams. Sleepy head red, it's time for bed.
Sleepy head red,
it's time for really my bitty my. It's time for bed.
You know I hate to leave you, but I've really got to go.
Maybe if the weather's willing, I'll see you in my dreams.
There was a Tully with Sleepy Head Red. On top of that, you heard from Karen O with Day Go By. You're listening to So Hot Right Now, your weekly dose of art and culture. For two nights only, former dance projects and Riverside Theatres will be presenting Above Ground, a two-part dance work that explores the subtleties of above ground movement with apparatus. Featured in Above Ground are two works, Cat's Cradle from physical theatre company Legs on the Wall and Soft Prosthetics and Metal Gods from celebrated choreographer Catherine Puey in collaboration with artist Lux Eterna. This morning we're joined by Catherine herself to tell us more. Good morning, Catherine.
Hi, Sophie. Thanks for having me.
Not a problem. How are you going?
Good. Yeah, really in the thick of the creative process at the moment.
So your work, it's centered around external devices and prosthetics to enhance and expand our human experience. Can you tell us more about that?
Okay, so we've been in research over the last couple of years, Lux and I, and Lux comes from a videography background, so her extended body is the camera and how that extends the gaze and how vision is, that capacity is enhanced. And for me, coming from a dance background and movement, my extension is stilts, so looking at the extension of the actual physical body. So what we're doing in this work is really subverting these objects and through our bodies transforming shapes and space, we are using these devices to really invite the audience to question how they see and how they also embody their own physical bodies.
Mm. Yeah. So how do how does the video aspect kind of interact with the stilt aspect of this work? And how, what were the audience experience quintessentially?
Okay, so what we've been really focusing on is integrating the actual camera into the live work. So it's not just sit in the corner on a tripod, but actually inside the work with a live feed. So as the movement is happening, the audience can actually really, I guess, embody the motion of the physical dance and have a sense of an intimate gaze, even though, you know, they're sitting in the seat, but they can have this really sense of close engagement with the work, with the Lux's vision through the camera, and also the experience of the physical movement. Yeah.
What kind of interested you about prosthetics and stilts to use in this work?
I guess we live in such a prosthetic world, you know, everything like our cars, our glasses, everything is, they're there to serve us, you know. And so I guess coming from this place of the body as a dancer and taking in these stilts, I started to really think, wow, actually, these are moving me as much as I'm in control of them. You know, I'm also at the mercy of these particular device apparatus. And so bringing that sensitivity into live performance and just asking the audience to question and maybe have a little bit more awareness around their bodies and the agency that they have with devices and that they use in day-to-day life.
Mm.
Yeah.
That's a lot of devices.
It's true.
So you've spoken about the expectations of the embodied gaze when it comes to prosthetics, and you're kind of unpacking it in this way. When people question, you know, how they use these devices, do you want them to, are you kind of telling them to question to stop using them or just kind of, you know, step back a bit from all the daily use?
We live, I guess, in such an oculocentric world that it's also that what Lux and I discuss a lot is coming back to the haptic realm, the real sensuous kind of sensual body realm. So in terms of the embodied gaze, for Lux, when she's wearing the camera, at one stage she wears it on her shoulder. How does that sit? How does then the camera inform the way that she moves? And hopefully that quality can read through the captured image for the audience. They just, yeah, that kind of sensitivity, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. So, and you know, you've been talking, you've been working really long with Lux on this. How did that collaboration all really come about?
Back in 2016, Lux invited me onto a project of hers, actually, and it was out in Anna Bay in the dunes, and this long day of filming. And I think from that moment, in that windswept, sandy, intense day, we just had a really strong connection. I took my stilts along for the day, and I just said, "Hey," at the end of the
stilts in sand dunes.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
Like, let's just try it. You know, let's just see what this looks like. And we captured some really beautiful images, and yeah, we knew that we had a very similar aesthetic and also a very similar approach to the way we see the world and how we want to experience it, and then also the way we want to make art.
Mm.
So that's where it all began, really. Yeah.
How has it been working in Riverside Theatres as a space?
Down in Parramatta, we've been really lucky. Legs in the Wall has been super generous, and they gave us a week of rehearsal space down at the Red Box in Lilyfield. So we had this beautiful venue there to just settle in for the first week. And then the following weeks, we've been at Studio 404 down at Parramatta, and that's been awesome, just having one space, just really, really nurtured solid in that one space to just generate and create and really unpack everything that we're trying to, you know, squeeze into a 30-minute work. But, yeah, and Form Dance has just been so supportive with all of, you know, the marketing and just this, all the things that an independent artist just is like, oh, don't have to think about that, please. Take that.
Excellent. Now, you know, we've talked about the stills, we've talked about the camera. What I'm also really interested about is the sound and costume. How does that all come in?
We've been working really closely with a composer and sound designer, Ashley Scott, who's been lovely. And it's, yeah, as we're trying to figure out what the work is, so too is he. So the conversation is just ongoing, you know, right up until we're going to have a rehearsal today after this interview, and he's going to come into the studio and just work through the finer details of and fine-tuning of the work. And with the costuming, we have gone with these mixed flesh tones. I guess the choice in doing that is to just allow the prosthetics to be those strong metallic shapes and materials in the space. We did go through a period of time wanting to also cover them in flesh tones, but we're like, okay, it's another work. We can't fit it in. So the costuming has kind of been a real choice around just not wanting to letting it kind of fade into the background in a way. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, it all starts off this week on the 21st.
Correct. Yeah.
Very exciting. has the work evolved much from, you know, since you've started coming into the new spaces to rehearse and stuff?
Yeah, the actually, even between, like, overnight, it just can shift, you know?
Yeah.
Some choices were made just yesterday. Our outside eye and dramaturg, Nikki Haywood, has come in and given us lots of great feedback. And because Lux and I are in the work and also making the work, super challenging to just know exactly what's happening at what time and how everything's reading. So Nikki's been great. And yeah, even up until yesterday, we just made some changes, and the work is just getting stronger and stronger.
Mm. Fantastic. Well, we can't wait to see it this week from Thursday at the Riverside. But Catherine, thank you so much for joining us today.
So. Cheers.
Not a problem. That's Catherine Puri, the choreographer of Soft Prosthetics and Metal Gods, one of the two works featured in Form Dance Projects Above Ground. That's happening from the 21st and 23rd of June at Riverside Theatres. It's just $35 for adults and $28 for concessions. They'll put all those details where you can get tickets on at 2ser.com. Here's a tune now from King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard. It is Trapdoor.
Hi, I'm Nishen Woodley, director of the Sydney Film Festival.
Hi, I'm Jenny Neighbour, the documentary programme of the festival.
And we're going to be telling you about some of the great films showing today at the festival.
Screening today at the festival, we have The Distant Barking of Dogs, a beautiful lyrical film about a 10-year-old boy one summer living on the front line of the Ukraine-Russian conflict. It's summertime, he wants to go and play, but there's rockets landing not far away, and his grandmother has terrible fears for his future. This is such an evocative portrait of a time of a young boy's life, but also what war really does to families.
From Japan today, we have the provocative film The Hungry Lion, which looks at a young woman in a high school, and when she's falsely claimed to have participated in a sex video. It shows how her life changes so drastically. The film looks at the impact of social media on modern lives, and it's a devastating portrait. Tickets for Sydney Film Festival are very easily gotten. Please visit our website, www.sff.org.au, or rock up at the cinema and buy a ticket there. We look forward very much to seeing you at the festival.
The world is burning. The world is burning.
Climate change poses the same threat.
The world is burning.
Right now.
Wind is destroying a lot of problems. And number one, it's killing the birds. Killing the birds. Killing the birds.
The world is burning.
Killing.
Right now.
Coral bleaching.
Solar panels.
The Carmichael mine.
Carbon emissions.
The world is burning.
Hydraulic fracturing.
Plastic bags.
This is too much.
What are we doing to the planet? Subscribe to Think Sustainability on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts to find out.
The world is burning.
I'm a house of bones, skin stretched over walls, a mirror in my mouth. Let your golden rays set my frozen face, a cataract of sound. Let your honey drip. From your fingertips, oh, let me have your lips of gold, of gold,
of gold,
of whispering the lips, the lips,
the lips,
my gaze spills your blood. Churning in my mouth.
Jenny Val and Susanna there with A Mirror in My Mouth. And on top of that, you heard from the legends of Psych, King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard, who from with the tune Trapdoor. I don't know which album's from because they probably have about 12 now in the past 5 years. So definitely one of the most hardworking bands around in Australia right now. You are listening to So Hot Right Now with me, Sophie, your weekly dose of arts and culture. But now it's time for your pop culture fix.
To the Batmobile. Let's go. Atomic batteries to power. Turbines to speed.
Roger. Ready to move out.
Holy smokes, Batman. It's Gaggle of Geeks with
Blake Howard
and Sophie Lai.
Good morning, Blake Howard of Graffiti with Punctuation.
Good morning, Soph. Good morning, all you geeks. I'm sorry, as you can hear me, it is Sydney winter, so I'm carrying around this congested sounding, probably markedly sexier voice than I normally carry around.
The funniest thing is, I've been waiting for the cold to hit me for the past like 2 months since everyone in my office has been sick. And I'm like, please make me sick so I can stay home in bed. Please make me sick. And I haven't been able to catch it from anyone.
No. And to
anyone.
Be, and what I would say to you is, to be fair, I haven't actually gotten the bad cold where you are like completely sick. I've got that one where you're like, you're just annoying and you have tissues at your desk and you have to take Codral, but you're still going to work every day.
Damn it. And
there are Sydney film festivals to be going on. So, you know, there's lots of excitement nonetheless.
Yeah. But it's been a huge week since the long weekend, since we last spoke to you guys. Heaps happening.
There's a lot. And we've had to narrow it down significantly. So
if
you guys want to check out our podcast, which is 2SER's Gaggle of Geeks, on all your favorite podcast apps for a full geek debrief, please do that. But we're going to have to really give you the abridged version because seriously, it is coming at us thick and fast. Soph and I are just like ninjaring to keep up with everything.
Well, this is the thing. It's the US summer / European summer. So it's all their blockbuster season pretty much, which is why.
And it's really weird because now, as we're going to talk about later, is like we're being teased like next year's blockbusters now, both for television and movies. So let's kick off with the big news. It was sort of on the tail end of last week in a weird tweet from then head of DC Movie Entertainment. Now he sort of pulled back, Geoff Johns, which basically hashtagged WW84, which didn't really bury the lead, but it hinted that Wonder Woman's title is Wonder Woman 1984.
Yep. So he hinted that. And this week, it is now in production officially after Patty Jenkins tweeted out a couple more photos.
Yeah. So director Patty Jenkins and writer Patty Jenkins, the amazing Patty Jenkins, who directed the $800 million original juggernaut Wonder Woman, is back in the director's chair. And as with everything these days, once you give a director or a filmmaker, a writer or a star the capacity to tweet out their own photos from their own production from their phone, then you basically, like, you can't do a press release fast enough that actually tells you that things are officially happening.
Like, it is so funny because it is just like, we told you not to. You just ruined it.
This press release I spent 6 months writing, Patty Jenkins, is now ruined.
Because you decided to tweet a photo. And what a couple of photos they are. So the biggest thing of one of these photos that everyone is talking about is at the end of Wonder Woman, the first film, we said goodbye to a character.
We did.
Played by Chris Pine, amazingly.
Yep.
Steve Trevor.
Steve Trevor, indeed.
And here he is.
He's back. It appears that he's traveled into the future and we do not know why. Just yet.
He seems to be wearing a jumpsuit.
He's wearing a jumpsuit. He's attired suitably for the era.
Yeah, some trackies.
And the other interesting one is that Diana is standing in front of, so you can tell that it's Diana from her reflection. Obviously, Gal Gadot cuts a pretty iconic silhouette. She's standing in front of like an array of screens, and one of them is like got Dallas on the left of her, and so very sort of 80s images in front of her. So she's standing in front of these screens, so sort of taking in all this information, which resonates deeply, you know, very Orwellian in that picture. And then Trevor being there is cool. Look, Twitter was just fired up at Steve Trevor being there, and my favorite tweet was that two Chrises, who play Steves. Die in plane crashes at the end of movies that are set in the past and then somehow travel to the future. And that can only be a good thing, is what is that tweet said.
Yeah, recurring theme.
Recurring Steve.
Recurring Steve.
Chris theme.
The Chris Steve phenomena.
Yeah, look, it's exciting, right? Yeah. If you guys, you know, occasionally, you obviously might have some podcasts if you're listening to this show on the weekend or if you listen to our podcast, you might follow other geek podcasts. I heard a great theory from the Fat Man on Batman podcast, where Mark Bernardin, who's the co-host with Kevin Smith, said he would love Steve Trevor to come back, but in fact, Steve Trevor to be secretly Martian Manhunter that was basically portraying Steve Trevor in a way to sort of get back to develop a relationship with Wonder Woman. And I don't care if that's not the theory. I just love that. I love that as like a, I know we were just talking nonsense now, but I just love that little bit of whimsical imagination. Like, oh, that is such a rad way to bring Manhunter
into
the universe.
If you don't know who Martian Manhunter is, he is, as The name suggests a Martian.
Also hunts men. Also hunts men.
Hunts men. No, but he was part of the Justice League. If you dig back into the old Justice League series, you can see him all there. But he's a shapeshifter. So that would be really interesting because the Martians have green versus white have some very interesting
histories that if
brought in with the Wonder Woman lore. What would that mean for the universe?
100%. 100%. Some cool stuff that could be there. But look, if they don't, which I don't think they should now, the more that I think about it is, I just don't want that interconnectedness. Let them be their thing. It's exciting. Everything's exciting about what they're talking about here. And speaking of excitement for some and rabid hatred for others, Game of Thrones has, which we're obviously waiting on the final season for, so very exciting, has greenlit. So HBO, the company in America who hosts Game of Thrones and we get it over here and produce it, had 5 scripts pitched to them.
Yep.
The script that got greenlit is one by the awesome Jane Goldman. So if you don't know her name, just off the top of your head, she wrote things like Kick-Ass, the first Kingsman movie. She wrote X-Men First Class.
Yep, and Days of Future
Past. Days of Future Past, too. She works really closely with Matthew Vaughn. So she's written it, and she's co-written it with George R.R. Martin. And what the prequel series is set in, it's set in the time where White Walkers didn't exist from the ancient age. And what made me laugh about this story more than, of course, it's a cool prequel series. Of course, yep. HBO. Makes sense for them to continue to explore the lore. Of course, George R. Martin's going to be involved. But the fact that he co-wrote the script, isn't he meant to be finishing these books, Soph, is my question to you. Isn't he meant to be finished? How many people are like, George, you need to finish these books, okay? Seriously, what is going on?
In the great words of Neil Gaiman, he don't owe you nothing. He can write it whenever the hell he wants. Neil didn't say it like that. I've forgotten the quote on top of my head, and now I'm making it up. But to that kind of... In that spirit, yeah. It's literally like, they are not your slaves. The artists will give you their art when they are ready.
Good. And look...
And as you can see, he is not ready because he's got too many ideas flying around in his head.
Too many other scripts. Bless him for helping. But yeah, so...
I was hoping like... he's written some prequels already to Game of Thrones, and I was hoping those adventures would be coming to the screen.
No, it appears they're going way, way back, which I like because it kind of kills something that some of the Game of Thrones series in the early series had, which is that people were really certain, or at least fairly certain where things were going because certain things do change. I like that they're going way, way, way back and it doesn't seem to have much connection. So, I'm a bit more of a fan of no connection, and the things that happened so far in the past don't really resonate, or maybe minor resonations.
Well, that's why I thought the egg story, because it was really well received by fans, and it was also like a little nod. It's like, this is very, very, very distant, like, ancestor of Brienne of Tarth. So, not related to the current series, but past. So
way in the past. And now the next story is the big one that broke, and this is this is our summary of the week's big geek news, is that there was a little trailer that dropped, which is super, and I'm going to say it's super unusual for a movie that is coming out to kick off next year's blockbuster season. Here's a trailer for Tim Burton's, I never thought I'd say these words together in the same sentence, for Tim Burton's Dumbo.
We're all family here, no matter how small.
Press your head close to my heart. Never too far. Baby, oh.
Sure.
Yes, you will believe a tiny digital elephant can fly in this movie.
Holy moly. And the thing I love about that is they gave us a little snippet glance of the scene that freaked out so many children as children when we were kids. When Dumbo actually drinks a bit of booze and goes on a very hallucinatory trip.
Yes.
With elephant bubbles.
Yes, indeed.
And I was just like, oh my God, they kept that.
Now, there's one thing. Dave Itzkoff, I'm going to go to, if you don't, you need to follow Dave. He's great. At Ditzkoff, DITZKOFF, did the tweet of the year, I think, in relation to this movie, which is, he wrote, and look, it's a stacked cast. You can see Michael Keaton there. You can see a lot of other regulars, Colin Farrell, etc.
Yep.
But he wrote, finally, a movie that lets Danny DeVito play a twisted ringmaster character. And he put three pictures. One from this trailer, another one from Big Fish, and another one from the penguin in Batman Returns. It is just the greatest tweet. And that's exactly what I thought here. Oh, another twisted ringmaster for Danny DeVito. He's been typecast by Burton, and that's all he'll ever play.
Yep, and he is in a Burton movie, so what do you expect?
Exactly.
What do you expect?
Look, Dumbo wasn't one that I saw a lot. So, like, of all the Disney movies, you know how sometimes with Disney you've got, like, this encyclopedic sort of vision?
Yeah.
You can catalogue every single moment.
Yep.
Dumbo wasn't, like, a big one on my rotation, so I might have to watch it, try it out on my little one.
I watched it a couple of years ago, again, because it was just on TV, and I was like, I swear this is more trippier than I remembered as a kid.
You never remember the trippy.
And then it was just like, you know, like, a bit problematic with like the Jim Crow crows. Mm-hmm. And you're just like,
That's just history. That just happens.
And then it was like, this is a really short film. It was only like 80 minutes.
I thought it's even less. I thought it was like 60 minutes.
Yeah, it is really short.
And it's like 57 minutes into the movie or something before you see Dumbo fly.
Yeah, it is really short.
So the last four
short.
Minutes.
But that one, as a kid, I wasn't really into princess movies. It was just all the animals. So it was Dumbo, Lion King, all of them.
Yeah.
Dumbo was in high rotation.
High rotation.
For me, so.
Well, guys, lots to talk about. Sure, we're going to definitely miss something. Thank you so much for listening in to Soho Right Now and a Gaggle of Geeks segment. And please listen to our podcast, Gaggle of Geeks on 2SER. But Soph, thanks for having me.
No worries. Till next time. Get better.
Yeah, I'll try. I'll see if I can still get high voice for our usual bye. Okay?
All right. One, two, three.
Bye! I did it.
Blake Howard there. And if you do listen to our podcast, we are actually looking for a regular contributor for games. So if you're a girl in games, we want you to be a regular contributor because we do not know enough about games and we'd love to have a girl in games tell us a bit more. So if you want to apply, just get in contact with 2SER or sohotrightnow@2ser.com is our email if you want to get in touch and talk to us about games. And also big shout out to all our geek family out at Supernova today and tomorrow. Have the best time because it truly is Geek Christmas when you go to a convention. You're listening to So Hot Right Now with me, Sophie, your weekly dose of arts and culture. And coming up, we are going to be chatting with Vicky Gordon, who is the founding director of the Australian Women in Music Awards. Yes, ladies who rock. So we're going to be chatting to her all about that next. But to get you there, here's a lady, Australian lady in music. It is Mia Lawson with Tearing Up the Lawn.
Can we go running around, hiding under the old street lamps? I've been shaking. keep rolling for the river.
Newtown Record Fair is your monthly vinyl record fair in the heart of Newtown. On the first Saturday of every month, from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m, Newtown Record Fair features over 10,000 vinyl records of all genres, live DJs, tasty cucina menu, and craft beer bar. Your perfect vinyl record experience. Newtown Record Fair, in the back beer garden of the Bank Hotel Newtown. NewtownRecordFair.com.au, a vinyl record partner of 2SER.
UTS Breaking News. Walkley award-winning journalist Monica Attard joins UTS's famous journalism program in 2018. As Attard says, it's crunch time for journalism, so education has never been more important. Make a date with your future. Sign up now to join Attard by registering for one of our advanced journalism postgrad info sessions in June. Head to pg.uts.edu.au today. UTS School of Communication sponsors 2SER.
Thank you.
A.V. Buffalo there from her album At Best Cuckold with the tune I Think It's Gonna Happen Again. You're listening to So Hot Right Now, your weekly dose of arts and culture. Later in 2018, we'll see the first ever Australian Women in Music Awards, an award ceremony aimed at acknowledging the talented women in the music industry. All this could not have happened if it weren't for founding director Vicky Gordon. And Vicky is on the line now. Good morning, Vicky.
Good morning. Nice to talk with you.
Not a problem. Now, can you start off by telling us where you came up with the idea to create a music awards of this kind?
Well, I've worked in the music industry for quite some time now. I used to run record labels, and I've started as a musician and worked as an artist manager. And in all the years I've worked in the industry, I've always been very concerned about the lack of women in who are being acknowledged across the board, not just singer-songwriters. I'm talking about women working in the back end as technicians and producers and engineers and managers and publishers, all of those other areas. So this has been a lifetime dream for me, really, a lifetime vision. I've been thinking about this for most of my career. So it's taken about the last 3 years of wrangling and talking with politicians and talking to government and liaising with community to get the inaugural awards up on their feet. And I'm proud to say that that's what we're doing this year in October.
I mean, congratulations, A, for getting it to this, finally getting it through. But you have a really talented and eclectic advisory panel. This includes Christine Anu, Queen G, and Isabella Manfredi from The Preachers, to name a few. How did you select them?
I have a fantastic chair of our advisory council is a woman called Tracy Hutchison, who's a long-term media person with lots of expertise in dealing with communities and particularly with radio, and she has great relationships with a lot of these women, as do I. So, look, I think where we find ourselves is in a time where the status of women is very prevalent in the conversation around the world across all industries, and I think that the support that we've actually managed to gather for the advisory council and also for our patrons and also for our juror council, which is made up of 20 men and women, it really reflects the time that we're living in. I think I think one of the quotes that I said when we first launched the awards in March was that I think that history is finally on our side, and that's why I believe we're able to gather so much support and momentum at this time.
Yeah, I mean, you know, for a long time, the music industry, we are seeing some changes with more female artists on lineups, especially at festivals now. But how would you assess the gender inequality in the scene at the moment?
Well, it's interesting that you actually bring up the festival lineups, because the area of programming in relation to festivals is actually one of the main concerns. Internationally, we're seeing a demise of women being programmed on major festivals right across the UK and in the USA. We're also seeing that happen here. Of course, there are festivals that are incredibly inclusive, but that is one of the concerns that we have. The other areas of concern have always been traditionally the lack of women in decision-making roles, the lack of women on our boards, our independent boards and our peak body boards. Also, in Australia currently, we're seeing 45% of qualified musicians are registered with APRA, where only one-fifth of those singer-songwriters are actually women. So that's actually a concern for us as well. And I think in terms of a lot of the existing award ceremonies, we're still seeing a lot of those awards being completely dominated by men. So there are a lot of the conversation I'm having with you today is the same conversation I've been having for many, many years around the status of women in the music industry. And that's aside from, I think, some of the challenges and struggles that our First Nations women are experiencing and a lot of our multicultural female artists and music practitioners as well.
I mean, just this week, Haim fired their agent after finding out they were paid 10 times less than a male artist on the same festival lineup. Do you think that we're going to see something similar happening with artists in Australia?
In terms of, you mean inequality around pay?
Yeah.
Oh, I think that's a constant thing. I think that's a struggle across all industries. And I was just saying to someone last night, actually, you know, change is a very difficult thing to make happen, and particularly when you're dealing with such big issues as gender and culture, and when you're dealing with such an entrenched patriarchal system that is really set up to benefit mostly men. So that's what we're dealing with in the music industry, and that's also what we're dealing with across many other industries. So the pay gap challenge is a challenge across all industries, and I don't see that changing in a hurry.
Mm. You mentioned how, like, you know, the system is rigged for the men, especially in the music industry. How do you think we're going to, what do you think is going to help kind of nurture women in the music and make it more inclusive and more equal for them? What are some of the first steps?
Well, that's the reason why we've established the Women in Music Awards, because I think what's really important is to, first of all, to celebrate, I think, the contributions and value of women and what they're doing in all of these areas of the industry. And by celebrating them and putting you'd obviously be aware of the award categories. We've got an amazing selection of categories there that are acknowledging, going to acknowledge women in all of these vast areas. And I think by doing that, we actually put the conversation onto the table around, well, where are our female sound engineers? Where are our culturally diverse women? Where are our music educators and those great people who are working with Indigenous female artists in remote and regional Australia? You know, where are our fantastic filmmakers and music photographers? Where are they? And I think that that's, as individuals, we have to take responsibility for the decisions that we make in life. And one of the things that I've been determined to do my whole career is to find a way to address some of these challenges around gender and culture. And that's what the Australian Women in Music Awards is aiming to do. And that's why we're also having these fantastic conversations about the importance of inclusivity and diversity at this time.
Well, it sounds like a brilliant awards ceremony that's happening. But just to finish off, who are some of the female artists out there that you think are a must listen for everyone right now?
Oh, look, you know, there are so many extraordinary artists out there. I'm really thrilled to be working closely with Izzy Manfredi from The Preachers, and of course she's such an inspiration to many young people, many young women, and of course so many of the other artists that we're associated with, and the great women that are out there all over the world. But I think the other thing I'd like to also say is that whilst we also celebrate our youth and celebrate all of those great women that are coming through now, we also mustn't forget those elder women that are, and their paths and pioneering work that they've done to get us to where we are now. So we will also, as well as our 14 award categories, we're also establishing an honour roll this year to acknowledge some of our elders and those that have come before us. So we must never forget those women either.
Absolutely. Vicky, thank you so much for joining us here on So Hot Right Now.
Thanks very much. Good to talk with you.
That there was Vicky Gordon giving us an insight into the Australian Women's Music Awards that will be staged later this year in October at the Brisbane Powerhouse. Nominations are now open, and we'll put all that information on 2ser.com. Just look for So Hot Right Now tab, and there we are. I'm going to jump back into the music now. Here's one from Reverend Jemima. This one's called The Plot Twist.
Jacket was smoking, and the sex was safe. Baby, turn on the oven now. I think it's time for a bake. The dog that chases his tail is always looking forward to a meal. The plot twist to suit the scene. Sometimes it's better.
dress to be the queen. Spiderweb serenader. He is singing to himself. My twosome devouring a little later. He thinks it's good for his health. A little later he finds his mind is so full of insecticide. And the plot always twists to suit the scene. It's always best to be the queen. Let's set the world on fire, make it start again. Let's set it on fire, we'll fill it all up with sin.
Want to listen to 2SER wherever you are?
We're now just a touch away.
Download the new improved 2SER app from your favourite app store.
The 2SER app is available for Androids too.
And it's free.
The new improved 2SER app. Stories, ideas, music.
Wherever you are.
Want to advance in your current role? Considering a career change? Or maybe you're thinking about the next step in your studies. No matter where you're at in your life story, join us this month for a UTS Postgrad Info Evening to chat about your options. Don't put it off. Explore where postgraduate study can take you. Jump online at pg.uts.edu.au to see the schedule and register for the sessions you're interested in. University of Technology Sydney sponsors 2SER 107.3.
You're listening to So Hot Right Now, weekly dose of arts and culture right here on 2SER, the home of stories, ideas and music. My time here is just about up. Big thanks to all our guests. Catherine Puey, the choreographer of one of the works in Form Dance Project's Above Ground. That all kicks off on Thursday at Riverside Theatres in Parramatta. So if you want to see Stilts indoors, that's the place to see it. Also, big thanks to, as always, Blake Howard from Gaggle of Geeks. If you want to listen to our 1 hour, yes, this week it is an hour long podcast. Just look up 2SER's Gaggle of Geeks on all good podcasting platforms and we'll be there. It's a big one and it's fun. And if you are a girl in gaming, we are looking for a regular contributor to the podcast, so do apply. And also big thanks to Vicky Gordon, the founding director of the Australian Women in Music Awards, which all happens in October. Very exciting stuff. If you're not a supporter and you'd like to support or give us a tax deductible donation, it is the end of financial year and we'd love your support. So if you have some extra cash lying about, maybe consider donating to 2SER so we can keep doing what we love here on this station and you can keep listening to the great stuff that we make. Don't go anywhere. We'll still have heaps of stuff coming up.